Today, I'm going to be talking about hearing from God. This was a kind of free session. Lisa had one last week or the week before. Had a kind of a totally free topic. So this was what eventually I kind of decided to speak on. On Tuesday, I was speaking to some of the leadership guys and saying, you know, that I got various kind of bits of things that I wanted to say, but wasn't quite sure how I was going to sort of put them all together. I've come up with a session on hearing from God. And as you can see on the screen there, I've called it part one for the rest of our lives. And what I mean by that is that, as with lots of things that we speak about, you know, it's a big topic, and it's something that I don't think any of us ever say, yeah, I've totally got that. Don't need any more advice or learning on that topic. I'm totally done. It's something that we're always going to be looking to get closer to God, hear more of Him. So I guess that I want to start with by saying, well, why do we want to hear from God? Hopefully the answer's obvious to us. If we believe in the gospel, if we believe that God is an all-powerful God, that He exists, that He created the heavens and the earth, that He created you and me, that He gave us Jesus to die on the cross for our sins. If He's powerful, if He's wise, if He knows each one of us, if He has great plans for all of us, if He's got things that He wants us to do and to achieve, well, of course, we want to hear from God. We want to know His heart. We want to catch a vision. And vision is one of the things that hopefully you're kind of picking up, that the people at the front bringing the words to us on a Sunday. You know, vision is a word that crops up again and again. So how do we hear from God? It can be seen as a bit of a challenge. It can be seen as a bit of a mystery. It can be seen as something that is only for the chosen few that God really speaks to. We read some pretty intense and personal encounters where God speaks directly to people within the Bible. So I want to start off by just running through a few of these encounters just to kind of remind ourselves. So, first of all, I preached on this word not so long ago in Genesis, where we have the character called Jacob, and he has a dream. And it says here in Genesis chapter 26, and he dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and at the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your offspring. A personal encounter, a vision of God, God speaking directly to Jacob. Moses. So lots I could pick out in Moses. I picked out this one, the burning bush. So it says here in Exodus 3, he looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses says, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am. Then he said, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. Do you think he took his sandals off? Yeah, I bet he did. Direct message from God out of a burning bush. I am God, take your sandals off. Yes, yeah, absolutely, straight away. We have a personal encounter with God, giving him direct instructions for what to do. God called for Samuel. So again, this is Samuel is asleep, and God physically, sort of audibly calls to him. So we're picking up 1 Samuel 3. We're picking up a little bit later. So God's already called Samuel twice already, this third time. And the Lord came and stood calling as at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant hears." And the Lord said to Samuel, "Behold, I'm about to do a thing in Israel at which the two ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. On that day I will fulfill against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end." There's obviously a lot more to kind of talk about in terms of what the actual message was. But again, that audible voice. What about Mary Magdalene at the tomb? So Jesus has been crucified. 3 days later, the stone is rolled away. Various people encounter Jesus, and this is one of those encounters which is recorded in John chapter 20. Having said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." She's looking for the body of Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father, but do go to my brothers and say to them, 'I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and to your God.'" Again, direct message for her. Go and tell brothers that you have seen me. Finally, an example here from Acts 9. This is Saul on his journey to Damascus to become Paul. Now, as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven shone around him. And falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And he said, "Who are you, Lord?" It's interesting, isn't it, that he's already calling this voice Lord. And he said, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what to do." So I've got various accounts here of God speaking directly to people. I think that we can get into a trap of thinking about the fact that, you know, these top-tier Christians, if you like, they get this kind of direct God speaking to them in this audible voice. Well, that's kind of nonsense, really. First of all, it's nonsense because, you know, we don't have this kind of idea of being top-tier Christians. We're either a Christian, we are a mature Christian, I suppose, and a developing Christian, but if we're a Christian, we're part of God's family. We are sons of God. So that's certainly the first one to say. Second of all, even for these kind of famous Christians from the Bible and famous Christians that we have now, it's still quite rare for God to kind of speak like that powerfully, that audibly to us. Three, and we need to ask ourselves, you know, are we actually seeking God to do that? Are we seeking for God to speak to us? Because, you know, we ought to desire God to speak to us like this. You know, it is possible. God can do it. Of course he can do it. And are we available to listen? Are we desiring that kind of communication from God? But on the other hand, if it doesn't happen to you, and I say it's never happened to me, it's okay. It doesn't mean that God does not want to speak to you, because he does. I prefer to look at a more familiar model, I guess, a more familiar model of God communicating, for me personally at least, can be found in the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, the story of the man that rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. And I think it's quite interesting that the text does not actually record God directly speaking to Nehemiah. God does not directly say to Nehemiah, Nehemiah, rebuild that wall. He doesn't say that. Let's have a look at what it does say. Because Nehemiah goes through a bit of a journey, and I want to just pick up on a few points. So I've taken little bits of text. So the actual chapter, the actual story of how this unfolds, you see there's kind of bits in between, but I've just picked out a few verses to kind of illustrate how I see this, how it came to be that Nehemiah actually gets on the road to go and do something about it. So stage one, I put here, learning or experience. So Nehemiah learns of a problem, an issue. He learns what is happening back in Jerusalem. So some friends of his say to him, and they say to me, the remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. That's the people. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are destroyed by fire. So first of all, he comes to learn something. He didn't know that the walls were destroyed, the walls were crumbled and the gates were destroyed by fire. He knew that there was trouble going on, but he didn't know that. Step two, or stage two in his journey, is he has a human response or a heart stirring. So his response to that, as soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. So his human response was to be very sad that this great city was now in ruins, and he mourned for that. And we can sometimes call that a heart stirring. We have this feeling in our heart that, you know, something's not right, something has upset us, and that can be a trigger for God to speak to us. At stage three, he spoke to God about it. And maybe he had an idea. So the text isn't really clear. And I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant, that now pray before you day and night for the people of Israel and your servants. So he brought the problem before God. He prayed to God and he spoke to God. Next, he has an opportunity. And I think this is really quite key when we're on this kind of journey. Does God give us opportunity? And here we can quite clearly see that he did. So Nehemiah is the cupbearer to the king. So it's quite an important position. It means that he's actually in the king's presence on a daily basis, one presumes. It says, in the month of Nisan, now of course I couldn't just gloss over that, I had to look up what the month of Nisan is all about. So that is a Hebrew month. I don't think it's got a kind of fixed date, but it's a month in spring, and it's 30 days long, just so you know. I was curious. I had to have a little look what that was. In the 20th year of King, and I thought, I wonder how you pronounce that. So you type it into Google, and actually I found a YouTube thing where they actually spoke it to you. So I put the headphones in. So it is Artaxerxes. In the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I had not been sad in his presence. And the king said to me, why is your face sad, seeing you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of the heart. So the king's actually quite switched on, isn't he? He's like, I think you're feeling sad about something. Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, let the king live forever. Good move, I think. Suck it up a little bit to the king there. Because, he wasn't really supposed to be sad around the king. The king was this really important person. He was supposed to be kind of on it all the time. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? Then the king said to me, what are you requesting? Nehemiah probably is expecting the king to say, oh yeah, they're there, never mind. Now, can I have my wine, please? But no, the king says, well, what are you requesting? What would you like to do? So, bing, opportunity here for Nehemiah to actually do something about this. Stage five, I'm calling vision there. Now, I say it's not clear in the text when exactly he has this kind of idea. So when he's praying to God beforehand, maybe he's got this idea that he's going to do something about it. But I'm interpreting it a little bit myself. And I think that when he was praying to God earlier, he might have had an idea. He was like, God, please fix this. Do something. Send someone. But here, suddenly he's going, oh, I'll tell you what, maybe I could do something. And that is when I feel that he gets this vision. And it's very, very quick. This is in the middle of a conversation he's having with the king. So it's not like he spends hours on this. This is very quick. But he prayed to the God of heaven very quickly. And I guess he said something like, God, I've kind of got this crazy idea that I'm actually going to go and fix these walls. Is that okay with you? Does that sound all right with you? Because I'm about to go and ask something of this king, and he could very well kill me for what I'm about to ask him. So, you know, just checking that we're on the same page on this one. And then stage six, action. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king and your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. Step of faith. He puts his vision into action. And of course, the king says, yeah, okay. And he gives him some papers to go and be official about it, which we kind of think, yeah, that's definitely God moving. So did Nehemiah hear from God? Yeah. We think that he did. Did he get that audible voice from the heavens? No, it's certainly not recorded, and I imagine if he did, then it would have been recorded. So it was more of a feeling he had. He had a feeling in his heart that something wasn't right. He had an opportunity, and he had a vision about what he was going to do, and then he went to action. As I said earlier, I've never heard the audible voice of God. I've never had this kind of big, booming voice in my head. And actually, I was listening. Richard gave me the kind of audio messages from the conference, leadership conference, 2016. So it's now over a year later. I'm still working my way through them, Richard. So I was listening to one the other day, and he was talking about this, and he was saying that, yeah, he's heard the audible voice of God three times. And, yeah, these were years apart, and he hadn't heard the audible voice of God for many years. So, you know, I took kind of comfort in that, I suppose, that, yeah, you know, it is possible, God does do it, but it wasn't as if, you know, he was kind of getting better at that and that God was now speaking to him all the time, like in that way. It was still quite rare. I felt like God wanted me to share a little bit about what happened. I'm pretty sure it's 2 weeks ago, it might have been 3 weeks ago, when I was at the front and I suddenly started prophetically singing. If you didn't notice that, then cool. But that's what happened. And, you know, I hope that you hear my heart on this, that I'm not telling you about this to kind of, to make myself, you know, go away, look what I did. But I just feel it was important for you to understand how that kind of process came about, I suppose. I mean, it wasn't something that I had practiced. It wasn't something that, oh, at home I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, I bet you. Tell you what, at the end of the worship, I'll do that. No. No, it was definitely very much a short, quick decision and process that I went through. So a little bit like Nehemiah. So first of all, I had a feeling in my heart, and I guess lots of people here will kind of understand what I'm talking about. This kind of, my heart starts beating a bit faster, and I kind of, the spirit's on me. Something's happening. God wants me to do something. And then I felt these kind of lyrics just kind of popping into my head. And then I had to weigh some things. So I had to weigh my heart. I had to think to myself, you know, am I doing this to show off? What's my heart? And that was quite an easy one. I thought, well, no, I don't really want to do this. So that was an easy one. I'm not doing this to show off because I don't really want to do this anyway. Then I got to weigh the message. So in my head, the lyrics were about lifting God's name up. So again, that was quite an easy one. I was like, yeah, that fits in biblically. That's a good message to bring. Then I had to check it over with the person leading the meeting. And again, that was quite easy because that was me. So it's like, you have permission to do that. Yes, good. And then I had to have opportunity. And I did have opportunity because the band were playing and they were sort of continuing. So there was a slot. And then I had to act. And I had to act quite quickly because, you know, I didn't know how long that slot was gonna last for. So I think that probably helped a little bit that I thought, well, it's kind of now or never, so go. And we want to encourage you guys to do the same, really. You know, when you feel God sort of weighing on you, to share that. We need to weigh our own hearts. We need to weigh the message that we bring. We need to check it with the meeting leader. We need to look for that opportunity, and then we need to act. It is tough/impossible to know for sure if God really has spoken to you. There's always going to be that little bit of doubt, and that's why it's called a step of faith. You can never be sure. But we can be confident because we can learn that touch of the Spirit in us. And say by checking it over with other people, we get that confirmation that, yeah, that sounds in line with what else we're doing. And we want you to be confident here at Rushi Community Church that, you know, if things go wrong, then you will fall, you will crash. But, you know, we've got nice soft crash mats here. You know, it's not going to be a really hard crash landing. You know, we're gonna catch you. It's gonna be a gentle landing, and we say, yeah, maybe that wasn't quite right, but we'll carry on. Vision. Just kind of gone off track a little bit. Vision. I've got on here a dictionary definition of what vision is. So a worldly definition of vision is the ability to think about the ability to think about or plan the future with imagination or wisdom. I think, yeah, that's pretty good. To plan the future. Vision is definitely forward thinking. And we're not just kind of hoping it's going to happen. We're not just like, okay, I think I really want that to happen, but, you know, if it happens, it happens. There is a plan, and we're using some imagination or some wisdom in order to bring that about. To go at coming up with what a kind of biblical or Christian perspective of vision is, because our perspective of vision is slightly different, because we want to bring God into the equation, don't we? So I came up with this. So I'm not saying that this is the definition of biblical vision. I'm just saying this is what I came up with last night. I've said, having personal intent coupled with confidence and tools from God to take on kingdom-enriching opportunities. Well, good, that's a good kind of murmur. Having personal intent coupled with confidence and tools from God to take on kingdom-enriching opportunities. Well, and I was thinking about this on the way up. I was thinking, yeah, can we have vision where we don't have personal intent? Can we have vision where we don't have personal intent? I don't know. But maybe not. For somebody else, somewhere else, we can plan for them. We can have ideas for them. We can suggest things. But maybe we can't really have vision unless we're actually going to be personally involved. I don't know, I've not thought that through 100%, but something kind of rings true for me there, that our vision is about what we're going to do rather than a vision for somebody else. Coupled with confidence. Again, I was thinking on the way up, maybe I should have put faith there, because I kind of mean the same thing. That confidence comes from God. That confidence comes from faith that, yeah, actually, you know, this can happen, that we've got a God on our side, and that God has got the tools in us to equip us. So if we have vision and we don't yet have the tools, well, the first thing is to ask God for the tools in order to take on that vision. And obviously what we want to do is kingdom-enriching opportunities. There's got to be an opportunity, and it's got to be something that's in line with God's heart. There are two types of opportunities, I think. I think there are sort of general opportunities and specific opportunities. So, for example, in the Bible, we are called to care for the poor. I think there is opportunity to care for the poor everywhere. You know, that's not an issue. We've got plenty of opportunity to do that. We have opportunity to care for the poor, even if we're poor ourselves. We still have the opportunity to care for the poor. But then there will be specific opportunities that go along with that. That you'll hear a particular story, you'll meet a particular person, you'll see a particular need, and then you have a specific opportunity. But yeah, it's important. It's not just a daydream. It's not just a nice idea that vision comes from having this intention. So moving on, how do we hear from God? Number one, the Bible, obviously. And what I actually made myself a little placard just to kind of help you to remember me holding this little placard here that says, the Bible is God's primary communication method. So anything else that I say from this point onwards, remember this. Remember my placards. The Bible is God's word to us. It's his direct word to us. It is the primary way in which we are going to learn what his heart is, what his plan for us is, and how he likes to do things is by reading the Bible. I thought of an illustration about sending a very detailed work email. I don't know if that sort of resonates with you, but sometimes you put a lot of effort into writing an email. It's got all the information in it. You've put some action points. You've told them who's going to be there. Maybe there's some sort of meeting going on. You've written an agenda. You've got times. You've got dates. You've got instructions to where to park your car, what to do when you arrive. You've asked them, you know, what kind of dietary requirements they've got. You've put all that information in there. You've packed it in. You're really happy, and you send it off. And then later on, you get people phoning you up and saying, what time is it again? It's in the email. What are we having for lunch? Well, actually, I put in the email that you could tell me what you wanted, and I would do that. And then on the day, they're like, what room? It's in the email. And I kind of feel like God's like that, actually. If we kind of make God kind of human for a second, you know, God's sort of given us this manual, this instruction book, this Bible. And then we're coming to him and we're saying, well, what do you think about that? What should I do? It's like, it's in the Bible. The Bible, you know, it covers everything. And where it doesn't cover everything, God's heart is there. And that's the important thing. God's written his heart in those words so that we can take his heart on board, then we can make decisions based on the heart that we find in the Bible. Directly. So I've mentioned a few already. So it could be the audible voice through the Spirit. Could be a picture. Could be a dream. Could be a word of knowledge. Could be a tongue. All of these I'm kind of grouping together as being direct hearing from God. Prayer and worship. So prayer is that, again, is obviously a very important method of communication. Prayer is not just us talking to God. Prayer is God talking to us as well. And worship kind of ties in with there as well. We heard, when we were at Eastgate conference back in January, we heard a nice illustration from Pete Carter there, who said that it was like, again, another computer illustration, I realise. Another computer illustration is that you've got Windows, haven't you? You've got various applications open at the same time. And Pete was saying that, you know, worship and prayer it should be a window that is always open on your computer. Whatever else you're doing, whatever applications you've got, whether you're, you know, doing a family thing, whether you're cooking, whether you're, you know, working, whatever it is, you've always got prayer and worship kind of going on in the background, that communication with God. And talking of Pete Carter, there he is, at the Eastgate. So the teaching of others. Okay, so that's, again, how God can speak to us, is through the teachings of others. Teaching, other people's teachings, should be biblically based, because the Bible is God's primary method of communication. Even for those that are doing the teaching, you know, the teaching should come from the Bible, which means that we have to use a little bit of discernment, a little bit of wisdom. We need to weigh the message that is being brought, which I'm not going to go into too much today. But what I would say is that, you know, discussions are good. So, you know, if somebody says something that you're not too sure about, then come and say. Come and have that discussion. We don't, again, at RCC, we don't want you to hear a word that one of us are saying and say, well, I didn't agree with that. I'm off. I'm not coming back again. No, we want you to come and discuss it, because discussion is good. Remember, Proverbs 27:17, iron sharpens iron and one man sharpens another. So, you know, it's okay to disagree. It's okay to have that discussion. But yeah, we need to weigh what we are taught. And then finally, something else. Ooh, something else. So again, I wanted to encourage you to find what your something else is that's going to help you to hear from God. But remember, the Bible is God's primary method of communication. So anything that I say here, it doesn't replace reading Bible. Because reading Bible is God's primary method of communicating to us. I've got a picture of a runner up there, because again, over leadership, Chris has shared that when he goes out for a jog, God speaks to him a lot. So I suppose that's Chris's something else. You're allowed to have more than one something else, by the way. It could be to soak in the bath. It could be to soak with music playing, about just sitting quietly and listening. It could be to go on a fast, so to not eat for a period of time. That might help to focus you, to get God to speak to you. But it might be knitting, it might be cooking, it might be dancing, it might be singing, it might be doing some kind of art or painting or whatever. So yeah, I want to encourage you, if you don't know what your something else is, then yeah, think about it. Ask other people, what's your something else? How does God speak to you through that something else? I don't know about you, but you know, God speaks to me when my mind is quiet. And my kind of something else, again, you're allowed to have more than one something else, but my something else is often to listen to music. Music is very powerful. I realise I'm going to only briefly talk about this. John Lennon, Imagine, is often quoted as being one of the best songs of all time. Obviously, that's an opinion, but when they do these kind of charts of, you know, the greatest songs of all time, John Lennon's Imagine, that's up near the top. And I just wanted to make a point that that's probably not to do with the tune. The tune is pleasant, it's fine, but, you know, it's more the lyrics, isn't it? It's the lyrics that make us think, the lyrics that kind of really bring the song together, and I think that's why it's considered to be one of the best songs of all time. I did a little bit of research into the song. It was released in 1971 on an album called Imagine, but it wasn't originally released as a single. So actually, it was a decade later in 1981 when it actually reached number one in the UK singles charts. It spent 2 or 3 weeks at number one. And then John Lennon was knocked off the top spot by Shut Up Your Face. Which I had to Google because I didn't know what it was. Actually, when I listened to the song, I actually did go, oh yeah, I do know that one. So, a bit of a silly song, isn't it? So, you know, totally other end of the spectrum, really. So yeah, some songs have got very deep, meaningful lyrics and some don't, I think is a point that I'm trying to make there. One song, that's important to me is the song Be Thou My Vision. Again, on Tuesday, when I met with the other guys from leadership, they were asking me, why did you choose that song? I said, I don't really know. But thinking about it, yeah, it has been with me in important stages in my Christian journey. I remember being at Christian Union when we sang it. On away weekends, we sang it. We sang it at my baptism. We sang it. So I kind of... And then when I was on a work placement year, again, totally new territory, I remember singing it then as well. So I suppose it has been around. So I just want to share with you how sort of singing these songs, how reflecting on these songs can help me to hear from God. Now, the songs, of course, are based on the Bible, because the Bible is God's primary method for communicating with us. So all of the kind of Christian songs that we sing, they should be based on the Bible, because that's where all of this kind of comes from. So the kind of the inspiration that we feel from the kind of the lyrics is kind of coming from the Bible, but not sort of directly. It is allowing us to interpret. So I'm just going to share just a few things, last sort of 5 minutes as I go through. And things that I found in the song Be Thou My Vision. So I've got the verses coming on the screen there. So first of all, I thought, O Lord of my heart. So I started thinking about the word Lord, you know, what does it mean? As with lots of words that we use, it kind of gets diluted. So now we have the House of Lords, don't we? We have the kind of Lord of the Manor feel to the word Lord, so it's now sort of lost some of its sort of its great meaning. And in fact, you know, did you know you can actually be a Lord yourself? I don't know if you knew that. go onto Google, type in be a lord. You can pay some company somewhere. They will send you a certificate, and now you're a lord. So it has been sort of, again, kind of downgraded. It's been watered down, I suppose, from where it was to start with. But this actually comes from the ancient Hebrew text. I didn't know this, but the word Jehovah and Yahweh are actually obviously both names for God, but they're actually guesses on how you pronounce the words. We don't actually know how to pronounce this kind of ancient Hebrew word. And that's because in the ancient texts, they just put the letters YHWH, YHWH, which is called the tetragrammaton, or four letters for God. Because apparently ancient Hebrew didn't have any vowels as such. So we don't know how to pronounce it just from those letters, because there's not enough information. The Jews in the first century AD didn't say the word out loud out of reverence, and actually because they didn't want to break the second commandment. They didn't want to take the Lord's name in vain. So they thought, well, I tell you what, the safest thing to do is just not to say it at all. So actually that kind of the pronunciation being passed down the generations, well, that got lost as well. So it's interesting that we don't know how to actually say it. But again, it's a translation which comes from the Greek Adonai. I grew up in a Baptist church and we sang the song El Shaddai, which again is kind of that ancient Greek language. El Shaddai, El Shaddai, El Elyon Adonai. Which basically means Almighty God, Almighty God, God in the highest, my Lord. So that word Adonai is the Greek word for Lord, which means speaking of his power, his might, his majesty. So the fact that, O Lord of my heart, you know, it's that Lord that's inside of us, that mighty Lord. Next verse, just want to pick out, thou my great father and I thy true son. Gets me thinking about the prodigal son, the story of the prodigal son. Also got me thinking about lyrics from another song, which is not a Christian song, by Mumford and Sons, called Roll Away Your Stone. So you can, again, already, it kind of got biblical connotations in the song. It has the lyrics, it seems that all my bridges have been burnt. You say that's exactly how this grace thing works. It's not the long walk home that will change this heart, but the welcome I receive with the restart. It's interesting, isn't it? The son walking home, he's had a change of heart in the fact that he's decided that he wants a better life. That's really why the son is walking home. It's because he's fed up of being hungry, of being cold, of being alone. He's going home for a better life, but have a better life as a servant. He's going to go to his father and ask to be a servant. But what really changes his heart is the welcome that he receives from his father. But this one, thou my soul shelter and thou my high tower. I like that because it's talking about two different ways that God cares for us. My soul shelter sounds like a warm and cozy living room to me. Nice soft chair, drinks, hot chocolate. And my high tower, that's the imposing presence, this high tower that's going to protect us from people. It's got me thinking about castles, about this idea of a fortress. And they're up high and they protect by firing arrows down below and even by pouring hot oil on the people that are down below. So I thought to myself, yeah, God cares for me and God protects me. He cares for me with hot chocolate for me and he protects me with hot oil for my enemies. Thou mine inheritance now and always. And High King of Heaven, my treasure thou art. Both of those are to do with having inheritance and having treasure now. Yes, we'll have inheritance and treasure when we die in heaven, but we've got that inheritance and that treasure now. It got me thinking about a journey for treasure, and about all of the kind of the problems that we'll face and the hardships that we'll go through. Then we come and we find the treasure, all this gold, and we find that it's cursed. It doesn't actually bring us happiness. It feels empty. But with God, you know, yes, we've got treasure to look forward to, but actually we're finding his treasure as we go along our journeys as well. And then to finish, you know, whatever befall, still be my vision. Again, I think that's really a nice way to prepare that in advance. I think it's important to, in advance, declare whatever happens, still be thou my vision. Tough times, hardships, you know, they are to be expected. And I say, I think it's really, really powerful to say in advance, these are going to happen, but still, be thou my vision. So I just want to encourage you to hear from God. And remember, I've shared with you how I use songs to kind of reflect on and listen to the lyrics. But God's primary means of communicating with us is by using the Bible. And I want to encourage you to share as well. Share what God's speaking with you. It doesn't have to be at the front. It could just be with your friends. It could be right now during tea and coffee, just sharing with people what you feel God has been speaking to you recently. You may have noticed that I like to use my kind of graphic skills. You probably noticed I put the RCC logo on those headphones. I've also hidden a little Bible verse in there as well, which is Psalm 46:10, which says, "Be still and know that I am God." Again, I think that's quite important. Not that we are physically still, but our spirit is still, our mind is still. So, you know, when Chris is out jogging, you know, he's not physically still, but his mind is just in that place where we can hear from God.